This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Memory of Christine McVie, who died at the age of 79. Remember her? A great part of Fleetwood Mac, Christine McVie. All right, good morning, and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us. It is already December. It is Friday, December the 2nd. My goodness, 23 more days till the big event. We will be talking in a few minutes with Emma Waters of the Heritage Foundation. We are going to talk to her about the Respect for Marriage Act making its way through Congress and how new polling shows that more people see this bill as an assault on religious freedom. So we're going to talk with Emma about what is behind this bill. And speaking of bills, the Senate has passed a bill to avoid a railroad strike. But will it appease the unions who have so far rejected the agreement? And should Congress be involved at all in settling this? So we're going to talk about that as well. And a new poll shows Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is the top pick now for president by Republican voters. He is surpassing Donald Trump. And we are going to discuss that a little bit later. And in our ultimate top 10, we got a good one. The top 10 most expensive cities in the world. Let's see if Ed knows what is number one. All right, we got a lot going on today. And just out, the U.S. economy apparently added 263,000 jobs in November. That's a little better than what was expected. You know, the other day we mentioned ADP. I'm beginning to realize that ADP, which is a data processing company, gets involved in payrolls, you know. Big. You know, they write a lot of the checks for different businesses. They always seem to underestimate when they come out with their data. It usually comes out just before the labor, U.S. Labor Department data. They always underestimate the number of new jobs. So, again, 263,000 jobs are added. That tops what they had expected, with they being, you know, some of these so-called brainiacs who had expected about 200,000 jobs. The unemployment rate is holding around 3.7%. Now, you got to remember that 3.7% is very misleading. There are so many people that are no longer receiving unemployment benefits. They're off the numbers. They're off the charts, you know. So 3.7% of people that are filing for unemployment, therefore, are considered unemployed. Now, will this change what the Federal Reserve does? This report, apparently, not going to sway the Fed from raising interest rates again. That's what they're saying here. So, you know, it's been a tough, let's face it, it's been a tough year economically. And as we move towards December, there's not been a lot of great news. It really hasn't been. Now, yesterday, The Senate passed a bill to avoid a railroad strike. At the same time, it rejected a separate measure that would have given the railroad employees extra sick day leaves. Now, this is what stopped some of these unions from voting for the package to begin with. And this also stops this cooling off period, or I should say the bill passed extends a cooling off period for 60 more days. Now, they're not going to go and strike. They're going to figure something out. The question is whether or not you need the federal government's intervention when you have a dispute between railroad companies and the unions. Now, back in, I think it was in the 20s, they came up with some sort of a deal where the government intervenes if the strikers and the railroad companies could not agree. Then they had this intervention. But there's really no, I don't know, constitutional reason for the federal government to be involved. Should the federal government be involved in every single big company wage dispute? No. It's supposed to be left up to the free market. In fact, our buddy Rand Paul voted against the bill. He voted present. And he came on and he said that this is not something that the federal government should be involved in at all. But the bill passed 80-15 in the Senate. So that means that both Republicans and Democrats basically had to sign on to this, right? Now it goes to Biden for his final signature. Now, again, there's a couple of the unions who are not happy. They wanted like 8 or 9 more sick days added to the deal. And that was not allowed in this bill. Whether or not the strikers that are still upset are going to be placated with this, I'm not so sure. Anyway, that's what's going on right now with the unions and the railroad work. That's the last thing we need is a railroad strike, right? A federal appeals court yesterday halted an independent review of those documents that were seized from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. The special master is being curtailed. The ruling comes from the Atlanta U.S. Court of Appeals, has reversed this Florida judge Eileen Cannon's order that granted the special master to take a look at these seized records and determine what is and what is not relevant to investigators. So this little thing continues on. I figure that the Trump lawyers are probably going to continue to sue to slow this whole process down. Now, we're changing horses, are we not, in January in the Congress? So I don't know where all of this will ultimately go, but the Justice Department wants to take a look, and they want to see if there's any way that some of those documents that Trump held on to violated some very important standards. I'm not so sure that they've really found anything that makes a damn bit of difference. But that's the way it goes. All right. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's called the Respect for Marriage Act. Is it really a great respect for marriage? We're going to talk about it with Emma Waters of the Heritage Foundation.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on Freedom Works for a Friday. We thank you so very much for being with us. We're trying to get our guest, Emma Waters, from the Heritage Foundation, having a little bad luck so far trying to reach her, but hopefully she will show up. We were going to talk with her about the Respect for Marriage Act. New polling, which her organization, the Heritage Foundation, has released, indicates that likely support for the Respect for Marriage Act may be significantly lower than the media will let on, especially among conservatives. The poll was conducted among 2,000 likely voters in a bunch of states, and respondents were asked whether they supported or opposed the Respect for Marriage Act. A plurality opposed the bill, 47%, compared with just 41% who supported the bill. Apparently, when made aware of the specifics of the legislation, more Americans opposed the bill, and the opposition grows substantially. All right, I think we've got Emma on the line. And Emma, good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works. We were just talking a little bit. Yeah, we were just talking a little bit about this this new poll regarding the Respect for Marriage Act. And I was just saying that apparently the more you know about this Respect for Marriage Act, the less you like it. So I was going to ask you, tell us a little bit about this bill called the Respect for Marriage Act. What is it supposed to do? And why is it that the more we read into it, maybe the less we like it?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So the misnamed Respect for Marriage Act, or what I like to call the Disrespect for Marriage Act, does two things formally and the third thing informally. So the first is that it explicitly overturns the Defense of Marriage Act, which established in our public law that marriage is between one man and one woman. And so it attempts to codify same-sex marriage along the lines of the Obergefell decision. What's important to note about this, though, is that there are no rights or benefits or privileges that are currently being withheld from same-sex couples that the Respect for Marriage Act provides them. So effectively, nothing changes for them. Everything stays the same on their end. But the second part of the bill that's of particular concern to the Heritage Foundation and any religious people of faith is that the bill does not provide any affirmative protections for religious institutions or persons. So what it does say is that nothing in this bill requires anti-discrimination legislation or the loss of a tax-exempt status for people who want to practice, according to their sincerely held beliefs, that marriage is between one man and one woman. But it doesn't go so far as to prohibit other government agencies or individuals from taking out that same anti-discrimination legislation. So that's where the huge concern lies, is because it puts a giant target on the backs of people of faith.
Yes, indeed. In fact, there is, I think, a suit that might be argued coming up this Monday in the Supreme Court. It involves this Colorado-based web designer, Lori Smith. She's an evangelical Christian, and she is refusing to make wedding websites for same-sex couples, citing her religious beliefs. And she's been sued. She's appealing a lower court ruling in Colorado that forces her to make these websites for gay couples. So this this kind of goes along with this your comment about how this bill, the Respect for Marriage Act, just will end up with a lot of different things like this, you know, with people. What they believe is their religious beliefs being trampled on, and then away we go to court.
Yes, that's exactly right. Because realistically, like, these aren't just ambiguous rights that potentially could come under attack, but this is a very real concern, and that, like you're pointing out, we're already seeing on a few different levels, and this is without an entire like legislative redefinition of marriage to back it up. So realistically, what you're looking at, so say, for example, a man in a gay marriage married to another man applies to work at a local Christian school, right? And for whatever reason, that school turns him down. So it could be a lack of qualifications. It could be the fact that, like, he is in a marriage that's contrary to their sincerely held beliefs, and they want to protect that, especially for the moral formation of their students. So all he has to do, if when the Respect for Marriage Act passes in the House next week, is then file a lawsuit saying that they discriminated against him based on his married status, or his status in a same-sex marriage, and then off to court they go.
Yeah.
And this is an incredibly long and messy and expensive process. And we can hope and we can pray that the court decisions and what I think will ultimately end up with a few pretty large Supreme Court decisions come back in the favor of religious persons. But there are no guarantees. But what you are looking at then are schools, K-12 or higher education, nonprofits, and other like religious institutions like adoption services, counseling services, churches, either losing their tax-exempt status or losing any government grants, licenses, or accreditation that they have. So this is threatening their very ability to be able to exist. It's not just how, to what degree they can exist, but like if they'll even be able to afford to exist with the loss of one or all of these things.
Indeed. We're talking with Emma Waters. She is a research associate at the Heritage Foundation's Betsy DeVos Center for Life, or I should say the DeVos Center for Life, Religion, and Family. And we're talking about this Respect for Marriage Act. I remember the Defense for Marriage Act, and if I remember it right, didn't Barack Obama sign on to it, which asserted that marriage was between a man and a woman? And also, let me just throw this in. I think that that if you allow this concept of marriage between two men or two women, why would you still be able to prohibit a marriage between three people or four people or five people? If it's no longer just between one man and one woman, it kind of is like Katie barred the door, correct?
Right. So this is, so an earlier version of the Respect for Marriage Act actually had this exact problem. So it simply said that marriage is whatever a state recognizes it to be. And it didn't clarify how many individuals could be in that union. So now with the Respect for Marriage Act, as we currently have it, it does limit marriage between any two individuals. Now, the phrasing two individuals is still very vague, right? Like, what is an individual? That doesn't specify sex, it doesn't specify age, or other very important aspects of protecting marriage in a nation. But it does, for right now, limit it to two individuals. However, the second part where it says whatever a state recognizes as marriage, other states must recognize, is where it really throws a wrench into it. So say, for example, the state of California does rule that there can be a marriage between three individuals. What does that mean then for every other state? So it technically goes against the two individuals of the Respect for Marriage Act, but it still falls within whatever a state defines it as. And this is not particularly unheard of. So in New York, just 2 months ago, a lower court judge ruled that for the sake of like a rent agreement, that they could consider three-person unions legitimate and on the same page as like a two-person married couple. Because they wanted, I think, like their insurance back and having rights to all the goods. So this did not affect state law, and it didn't extend beyond like rent agreements in that district of New York. However, if we're already recognizing three-person unions on a small scale, then it's a matter of time before another state tries to push for a change in their marriage laws that could include three people. And then that's exactly where the concern comes in on the national level.
Yeah, indeed. You know, people are for the most part very understanding, and we all know people, gay couples, you know, that live together, and that's fine. It's when this thing becomes, you know, when they have to legalize the process. Some will say, well, if you don't legalize it, then, you know, benefits being passed on this way and that. No, you can still set up your trusts and your wills and everything else for, you know, for two men or two women, just the same way. I just don't see why there is such a push to legalize this thing when there are so many pitfalls, you know, that we are bringing and talking about right now, Emma, on this thing. It's just, it kind of surprised, kind of, I don't know, it's very, very strange.
No, it absolutely is. And like we've just said, right, like, this is not a bill that penalizes same-sex married couples if it doesn't pass. Everything remains the same for them, which implies that there isn't a lack or a loss of rights or benefits that same-sex couples are currently suffering under, right? Like, this instead is an attempt from the left, especially reeling from the Dobbs decision, which is where this concern initially came from, to score some political points, I think, against the religious right that they perceive as being a little too powerful right now, right? Like, the Dobbs decision that returned abortion to the states was a huge win for the pro-life movement. It was a huge win for conservatives. And this Respect for Marriage Act just seems like an attempt to chip away at that win and score some political points for your own side. But what's so concerning is the 12 Senate Republicans that voted to pass it twice, mind you, voted for it knowing that there would not be any amendments that protected religious institutions or persons. So they had a vote on the Mike Lee Amendment, which was by far the best amendment when it came to actually providing these affirmative protections. But there were two other amendments that also addressed the private right of action. And so with all three of these amendments failing, you would have thought that Senate Republicans would have said, well, even if my constituents largely support gay marriage, I'm recognizing that this bill doesn't protect any of the religious institutions or persons, many of which, like many of the Republicans who voted for it, were religious themselves, right? And so it's quite bizarre. And then on top of that, in 2016, the GOP platform published their policy priorities for the next couple of years, right? And one of the things they established in 2016 is that every child has a right to a mother and a father. And yet, in voting for the Respect for Marriage Act, what these 12 Senate Republicans and the countless Democrats officially and unofficially said was that a child does not have a right to a mother and a father, and that a child can be raised by two men or two women, and it all be equal, right? Completely overlooking the fact that they're actually depriving a child of the love and affection and the play and protection that they receive from a mother and a father, and that being essential to their well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. People forget about that. I mean, we can talk all we want about having two men or two women, and they're, you know, doing a great job of raising children. But let's be honest, when you have a normal man-woman relationship and children are brought up in that kind of an environment, common sense will tell you that they're going to be more, let's say, or have less problem of being maladjusted.
Yes, no,
they're just
exactly,
you know,
right.
The balance that is brought there. It's just nature, and I don't know. It's like a house of cards, you know. When we start to legalize these kinds of things, go ahead.
It really is. And I mean, if you trace it back, right, it really started with the implementation of no-fault divorce. Starting in 1969 in California, ending in 2012 in New York, where every state legalized no-fault divorce and effectively said that marriage is no longer a lifelong union between a man and a woman and for the good of children, right? And then we see it just fall apart from there, where if it no longer matters, if procreation is no longer a part of marriage, then it doesn't matter who's in the marriage, right? And if it's simply about fulfilling the desires that you have, then what if your desire is to be in a union with another man, or with two men or with two women, right? Like, we've completely eviscerated the meaning of marriage in our state and public law for decades now. And so on the one hand, it's not a surprise that we would end up with the Respect for Marriage Act as we have it now, but I think it should be a very loud wake-up call for just how far we've fallen in our understanding of marriage and, like, what we prioritize as good for children.
Indeed. Now, from a, I guess, from the standpoint of where is this Respect for Marriage Act making its way through Congress right now? I mean, is there any chance it's going to pass? What is its status?
Right. So on Tuesday of this week, the Senate voted on three amendments, like I mentioned, and then had a final vote on the Respect for Marriage Act that passed. And so now the Respect for Marriage Act is going back to the House for a second time for a final vote. And so that vote is going to be on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Now, with the Democrats still having a majority in the House and it already having passed the House just a couple of months ago, we unfortunately expect the Respect for Marriage Act to officially pass in the House on Tuesday and then go to President Biden to be signed into law. So at that point, pretty much once it's passed the House, that's when it became official. And so going forward, aside from preparation for litigation and the lawsuits that are necessarily going to come, what the Heritage Foundation and other scholars have been preparing for is starting in the next Congress, we'll be pushing for the Mike Lee Amendment to be amended and added on to the Respect for Marriage Act next Congress, so that at least we can get the religious liberty protections in place so that it doesn't just become a free-for-all attack on religious persons and institutions.
Indeed.
So there is hope in the coming year, but it will be a long fight to get even those minimal protections in place.
Emma, my colleague Ed Davis has a question for you, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Actually, Emma and Paul has had a question. I was curious. I looked something up.
Oh, yeah.
When we talk about kids and the marriage between a heterosexual marriage, man and woman, we look for stability. I looked it up. The average span, the lifespan of a marriage between a man and a woman is about 7 to 8 years. We know that. You know what? How long it is for a gay marriage? 2.5.
How long?
Two and a half
Delta.
Years.
Yeah.
2.5.
You know, it's kind of sad because even the a marriage rate length for men and women has come down because of all of these things that have made it easier for people to get divorced, like out in California, as Emma mentioned, the no-fault divorce, you know. It's just making the easier you make something like that, the less respect you have for
they,
it as well.
They also point to pressures of being in a gay marriage and stuff, but I don't. You know, I don't remember straight marriages having specific parades, you know, in certain towns because they're straight marriages, you know.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening. But anyway, I was interested in that stat.
Yeah, that's a very interesting stat. They just don't those relationships don't last as long, and you're right. Emma, it is our pleasure to have had you. Thank you so very much. Keep up the good fight on this. It's so important.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on to talk about it today. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure, dear. All right. Emma Waters, the Heritage Foundation. We are going to take our break. And when we come back, hey, a new poll, speaking about polls, shows Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is now leading Donald Trump as the top pick for the Republican nomination for president. We're going to take a look at it.
Make the stars look like they're not shining. Her hair falls perfectly without her trying. She's so beautiful, and I tell her every day.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is marine wildlife artist and conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on a Friday. First Friday of December, as a matter of fact. My goodness. Year is just flying by. You know, the older you get, the quicker those years go by. I tell you, there's truth to that. Well, most voters apparently would rather see Florida Governor Ron DeSantis as the nominee in 2024, GOP nominee, we should say, over former President Donald Trump. That is according to a new poll, Marquette Law School poll. And at the same time, that poll found that a majority of Democrats do not think President Biden should run again. Kind of interesting. Let's see here. In the Marquette poll, a hypothetical 24 matchup between DeSantis and Biden, they were tied if DeSantis ran against Biden among registered voters. Both got 42%. About 11% said they want a different candidate. Now, these results reflect a major increase in support for DeSantis compared to a January Marquette poll where he only got 34% against Biden's 43%. So DeSantis is making headway. The more people find out about Ron DeSantis, it tends to be to his favor, the more they like him. When respondents were asked if they would vote or who they would vote for if Trump were the GOP nominee and Biden the Democratic nominee, the poll found Biden with a 10-point edge over Trump. So DeSantis ties Biden, but Biden beats Trump by about 10%. Ed, do you think that you know, these polls are just...
Where are these people that are in Biden, other than Thursday at 10 o'clock? I can't figure out where these boneheads are. I mean, I have not... You know, honest to God, I've not had one person come up to me and say, you know...
I just got called.
That Biden's doing a hell of a job out there, isn't he? You know, not heard anybody defend him except for to defend him because they want to demote Trump. Mm-hmm. Is the only thing they want to do. Whenever something's not working in his cabinet, it's Trump's fault.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're saying where is anybody that's supporting Biden?
Where are these people?
I don't know. Common sense goes out the window. When you are a Democrat or a Republican, let's face it, you're going to vote for your guy. He's on your team. You know, it's like a teammate. Let's say you're playing football. You know, and this guy's doing this, that, and the other thing. He's a boor. He's, you know, he does. But you're going to support him because he's one of you guys. You know, he's on your team. That's kind of the way it is with politics.
You know,
common sense is not the primary.
Secretary of Treasury, whatever that ding dong's name is, she was on with Stephen Colbert, which every Secretary of Treasury should be on that show.
Yes.
Blaming everything on COVID once again. All COVID's fault, you know. Everything was going great.
Yeah.
Everything was going great for the Trump administration until that present dropped out of the sky for the Democrats called COVID.
Yeah, it was. No, you're right. The COVID probably did Trump in, and yet he responded as quickly as he could to it. Speaking about people making stupid statements, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is blaming consumers' excessive spending.
Yes, that's her.
Yeah, it's the Treasury Secretary. You're right. And she went on the Late Show with Stephen Colbert. I'm glad I missed it. Of course, I wouldn't watch Stephen Colbert.
I wouldn't watch that idiot anyway.
I wouldn't watch it if it was the only thing on TV. But she was asked about the price increases.
And Colbert asked her to explain how inflation got out of hand when, quote, 2 years ago, everything seemed fine. Yellen argued the administration managed the COVID pandemic so well, that consumers felt comfortable to splurge.
She must be talking about
what
Florida.
What the hell was she talking about?
She was talking about Florida. She got mixed up.
Yeah.
She thought, you know, when he asked about the country, she thought he said, well, what about Florida?
So now it's because we're splurging and we're spending
so
much.
Yeah, that's our fault. You stop going down and buying extra eggs.
Yeah.
You know, and buying that damn power bill, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. She disregards the fact that we're going to shut down the oil drilling, which increases the cost of gas, makes it scarcer. And then we had the problem with the delivery of products on the shelves, which is going to raise the prices and make when they're scarcer. You know, the fewer products and the more dollars, it hikes inflation. And she's the Treasury. Of course, you know, she was also the head of the Federal Reserve for a while. She's a dangerous woman.
I'm telling you, these things. These people that are in office scare me.
Yeah,
how they got in office? I have no idea.
I know it. Some of these people, it just boggles the mind. Like AOC, she was a bartender. All of a sudden, she's now a brainiac that we must listen to in Congress. What are you kidding me?
Congressman Nadler, Senator.
Jerry Nadler.
That guy is so out of touch. It's not even funny.
He's been around for a long time, that Jerry Nadler.
Listen, I'm saying on both sides. On both sides.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and some of them are just completely out of touch.
Oh, there's no question about it. And you're right. It is on both sides. I mean, we've got this is the oldest. I think we were talking about this the other day. This has got to be the oldest collective group of politicians we've ever had in Washington, if you think about it. Look, the Senate Majority Leader, isn't he in his 80s?
Sure.
The House Majority, Speaker of the House, isn't she in her 80s? Isn't our President in his 80s? Isn't McConnell, the Senate Republican head, he's in his 80s? Holy Toledo. I mean, this is really... I don't know. Ageism, sometimes, you know... you get knowledge and experience with ageism, but you also start getting all kinds of...
Yeah, but then it starts to go in the other direction, you know?
Exactly right. Yeah, that's true. That is true. Before we take our break, I got to talk about this one. You want to hear about what a hypocrite is? Justin Trudeau, he's being labeled a hypocrite because he expressed support for those Chinese protesters that are rallying against the zero COVID policy in China. This is the same guy who invoked the Emergencies Act for the first time in Canadian history to quell the Truckers' Freedom Convoy. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Anti-lockdown protest that they were doing. This it gave the power of the Canadian government to prohibit public assembly, restrict travel, and require businesses like tow companies to act on the government's demand and freeze the bank accounts. Listen to this. Freeze the bank accounts of those suspected of supporting the convoy.
Yeah, I remember that.
That sounds more like China.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you remember?
Yeah.
So this guy, Justin Trudeau, he can act like a dictator when he wants to, apparently. Just turn it on and off.
Well, in the Chinese... The authorities are doing it with the phones. They're grabbing the phones off these people. And if they find a phone app on there, they can, I guess they can red card you, whatever, which is lock you down with no food.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing that there are places in the world that treat people like that? You know, like North Korea, Iran, China. How many... billions of people, if you add up these places,
are
under the thumb of a handful of people at the top.
We can't control everybody's economy.
Of course we can't.
But on the same hand, you know, don't go down there and beg for oil.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, to Venezuela.
You know, and one saying how bad it is down there, and then on the other hand, go down there and beg for oil.
Yeah. I know. It's... that's also hypocritical.
Remember the Gulf War, the blood for oil? Oh, it's all blood for oil.
Oh, yeah.
Blood for oil. Oh, what is it down in Venezuela right now?
Oh, yeah.
We care what's going on. We want your oil.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead and do whatever you want to your own people.
That's another topic that doesn't come on Thursday.
As long as your buddies.
Running out of...
Hey, let's take our final break. When we come back, among other things, we're going to talk a little bit about who could be the Democratic presidential nominee in a couple of years. And we're going to tell you the top 10 most expensive cities in the world.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works. Thank you so very much for listening in. We are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on WTAN and the Tantalk Radio Network. We're much obliged that you would take the time. However, we know you're busy. And thanks to Big Ed, we put all our shows on podcast, on tape, so that you can go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com, O-U-R, ourfreedomworks.com, and click on the podcast button. There's the shows. Ed's got them all on there for you. Most recent show at the top, you'll know who the guest is and the top 10. Bless his heart. ourfreedomworks.com. All right. So, we've been talking a little bit about Trump and DeSantis and running for the Republican presidential nomination. What about on the Democratic side? Who could be the presidential nominee? You know, Biden is was asked again about running, and he kind of, he was a little more negative. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it wasn't like a given that he was going to run again. I think he's finally getting the message. But Biden has become the oldest serving president when he turned 80. Very oldest. Nobody's been that old and been president. Here are some of the top options that Democrats have to look forward to if he chooses not to run. How about Kamala Harris? She's only 58 years old. She's got plenty of energy. She's a wonderful speaker. She always makes a lot of sense when she talks. I think the term word salad was invented with Kamala Harris in mind.
She hangs out at the border all the time. Oh, sorry, that's southwest of the border. That's Taco Bell.
Between
sorry.
Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, I wonder how many seconds they have actually stood on the border. How about between 0 and 10, you know, in their entire lives? Now, besides Kamala Harris, how about Pete Buttigieg? Can you imagine Pete Buttigieg being in contention? Is that how dry the stable is? That Pete Buttigieg
I just have
would be
him,
considered?
I have him, the image of him with that baby and the fake booby that he had strapped on. I don't know.
He would be a real character. And then he would bring the first husband into the White House with him.
First, that would be the first man.
Yeah. Now, we've still got Bernie Sanders to kick around. I mean, that guy's going to be close to 90. He's 81 years old right now. He'll be 83. Can you imagine him being the president? I mean, of all the people that should not never be president, never be president, I think Bernie Sanders might be at the top of that list. Then we got, and I don't even know this person very well. Have you ever heard of Ro Khanna?
No.
I haven't either. California Democrat that's been traveling the country touting his book on dignity in the digital age. Let's see here. He has ruled out running against Biden, but has made no effort to hide his interest in a White House run in the future. He is little known outside his California district. The other guy is Gavin Newsom, of the Republican governor, and he said he would not run if Biden was running.
What, are they scared of Biden?
Well, I think that Gavin Newsom doesn't think Biden's going to run, so he's saying, I'm not going to run if Biden runs, knowing that that Biden's probably not going to run. I would think Gavin Newsom might be their best shot.
Sure, we'd all have $8 gas.
Yes.
We'd all be locked down.
Yes.
People would be fleeing the United States for Canada and Mexico.
Yes, we'd probably run out of water, too, because they're running
out of
water.
We'd have to reverse the border wall to keep Americans in.
Indeed. Things would be fun if Gavin's the one. How's that sound? All right, Ed, before we get to our top 10, I don't know. Is there anything going on? I guess World Cup soccer is a big deal these days. Do you follow any of that at all?
You know, the one thing I can't stand about soccer is a 0-0 tie.
They're kind of long,
and they had one.
Dull games, aren't they?
Ugh.
I mean, hard to get anything more than 2-1 or 2-1.
I did watch the one where the second half, or the late part of the second half, of the one where they played Iran, and they won that 1-1, of course.
You're talking about the U.S. winning, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. And I think they play again Saturday.
Hey, let me ask you this. Do you think that they should make the net or the goal wider?
No. What I think they should do is make the field shorter.
Or the field shorter?
The field should be short. You know what was great? Did you ever see indoor soccer? Now, that was fun because they would put in arenas like the Lightning or whatever. And they would score 6-7 goals. You know, that was fun to watch.
Yeah, you might be right.
But I think there's too much area between. Or here's the thing. You know, when you get to, instead of this overtime, or I'm sorry, 0-0 tie, is cut the players in half instead of, what, how many around there, 7? Cut them to 3 or 4
on each side. Hockey.
And bring the goals in. And give them 5 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah, I might be right. You know, I was just thinking when you were talking about indoor soccer, remember indoor football, arena football.
Right, yeah.
But arena football didn't last. It kind of died out.
But you got the ball on one end, and they kick it down the other, and you can go on there's plenty of time to grab a sandwich and a drink in between getting the ball from one end of the field to the other.
It does seem like a big field, yeah. Of course, the world is so used to it. The rest of the world, you know, soccer is the sport.
Yeah, we call that kickball.
We call it kickball here, but soccer or football is their football.
Yeah,
it's the sport. All right, Ed, it is time for our top 10, and these are the top 10 most expensive cities in the world. This comes from the Economist Intelligence Unit's Worldwide Cost of Living Report. The survey carried out in August and September of this year compared more than 400 individual prices across over 200 products and services in 172 cities, so that they came up with, if you were going to have to spend money on products and services, what are the top 10 most expensive cities? So here we go. Number 10. How about Sydney, Australia? Yeah, down under, with kangaroo meat being what it is these days. It's raised the cost.
Everything's shipped in there.
Yeah, koala bears and all of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. By the way, this is a tie, technically, for number 10. So roll the drum again. The other place tied with Sydney, Australia, is Copenhagen, Denmark. Capital of Denmark. And you know, that's another place, you know, that they have to import a lot of stuff up there, you know. So that makes it even more expensive than normal. But it's got to be really bad these days. Number 9, Paris. Good old Paris.
Really?
Yeah. The City of Lights. That's what they call it, you know.
Mm.
Beautiful city. All right, number 8. Not surprisingly, San Francisco. San Francisco, very expensive place to live.
Yeah.
Always been. Always since I can remember.
They've paid all them homeless people on the streets.
Yeah. Okay, number seven. The banking capital of the world and the cuckoo clock capital of the world, Geneva, Switzerland, where all the banks and all the money transactions and all that good stuff is going on. It's always been a rather, Geneva, you always think of you know, wealthy people running around down the streets there. Number six, nearby Zurich. Zurich, Switzerland is number six. Wow. Yeah. Tie for number four. Drum roll, please. The first number four is Los Angeles. Yeah, good L.A., good old L.A., not surprising. Everything's been expensive there for a long time, getting worse. Drum roll again for the other one, Hong Kong. Now, I was kind of surprised, but Hong Kong, you know, they make a lot of products in Hong Kong, but they're becoming more restrictive. Mainland China cracking down on Hong Kong. Years ago, you know, it was overseen by the British.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Prince Charles went down there in an informal ceremony. When was it? Back in the 90s or late 80s? Handed over the so-called keys to the kingdom to nationalist China. They were letting go of it. Okay, number three. Tel Aviv, Israel is number three. That's another place where they have to get a lot of things imported. They're basically out in the desert, you know? God. All right, we have a tie, Ed, for number one. That's why we don't have a second place. So you want to do a major drum roll here? Let me give you a hint. One of them is here in the U.S. What do you think would be the number one most expensive city in the U.S.?
New York?
Yes. You are correct. It is. You want to harbor a guess on what is the other tied for number one worldwide?
Is that not in the U.S.?
It is not. No, this is in the world. I'll give you a hint. We just talked about a place close to it that is surprisingly expensive now.
I don't know.
You want to even get no guess?
No.
Okay. You want to do a drum roll again, or shall I just say it? Okay, we'll do a drum roll. Singapore is tied with New York for the most expensive place to live in the city. So there you go. And we got some extra time here. I don't know what. What's the weather like up north? Have we been getting a lot of snow in any of the major cities?
Rain is going through the Midwest.
Rain?
Okay. Right now. And the Rockies are getting their fair amount of snow right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Colorado because you always keep an eye on Colorado. They have a lot of snow
in
Colorado.
South is going to be above average for the next 10 days.
Yeah, our weather's been pretty mild.
Yeah.
Which we like.
I'd like it to cool down a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mind it cooling down. I'd like to get a little bit of a Christmassy feeling around here. Yeah. But we've had some pretty good weather here. So
I'm like sweating while you're putting your Christmas lights up.
Hey, by the way, you know we're 2 days past the hurricane season.
Yeah, finally.
God, it's a long season. It's half the year, all the way through November. All right, well, thank you so very much for joining us. Have a wonderful weekend. Remember this, please. Freedom works.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by General Steel.
I'm Steve Kathan. President Biden at the White House right now signing the newly passed bill that prevents a nationwide rail strike.
The bill I'm about to sign ends a difficult rail dispute and helps our nation avoid what